Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Developer Guidance, Windows Phone, Microsoft Corporation, Jesse Liberty.
Hello. There you go. That's the difference between a keynote and just a presentation. I want you to know I can't see any of you. Not one of you. So, we saw a lot of exciting things in the keynote, and a lot of them had to do with Silverlight 5. And I know that you're feeling, I'm pretty sure you're feeling what I'm feeling, which is, can I have it now, please? But what I'm going to be talking about is Silverlight 4. I know, I'll let the disappointment sink in. And I'm specifically going to be talking about data binding and the role of data binding as the foundation for everything that's to come. If I don't get a big laugh at this slide, I am really in trouble. So just so you know. I want, first of all, before I proceed, to thank Scott, of course, and all of the folks who did their presentations. They did a fantastic job. I particularly want to thank John Papa, who organized this and scheduled me after Scott. Thank you. I do know what it feels like now to be the guy who used to come on after Johnny Carson. Very distressing. Okay, data binding. The idea behind data binding is very straightforward. You have data, some sort of data. It doesn't matter what it is. It could come from a database. It could be mail messages. It could be an XML file. You have some kind of data. You have some kind of presentation, and you want to put them together. You want to have that data represented in that view. The way I tend to picture it is I've got a human, might be a customer, he's got a name and an address in his wallet and or her wallet and all this different information. And then there's this window in front of them and different parts of their body get sucked into different windows. Well, you may not like that image as much. But it's basically the way of holding that data together with that presentation. If you do it well, it is an entirely natural experience for the end user. And I totally get why you're sitting there, if you've been through any of these before, with a certain level of skepticism. Because traditionally, the technical term for data binding is it sucked. You would go to one of these presentations, and they would show you, here's our data, here's our presentation, you don't have to write any code. First of all, stop right there. As soon as somebody says you don't have to write any code, I break out in hives. Thank you. I'm going to put, and you remember how that would be? You would go home, it would be like really cool. Oh man, I can't wait to get home with that. Whoa, give me the bits. And you go home, and what you would discover is that if you had one data source going to exactly one view, and your data happened to be identical to what they did in the demo, it worked great. I'm going to suggest that we have, in fact, with Silverlight, .NET in general, Silverlight specifically, gotten past that. You'll have to I got to tell you that this slide, I swear this is true, this slide has been in my deck for 2 weeks because they said to me, send us your slides. And I said, okay, fat lot of good they're going to do you, but here you go. So I sent in my slides. I arrived at CTAC. And they rented to me, no joke, a Toyota Matrix. Now, I knew I was in good shape. So come with me with the red pill. Okay. The reason that I believe that that connection works now is because of events. Because you can hook the event that says, I'm data binding, and modify that in any way you want. And because we're aware of how absolutely critical it is to have those events, we have quite a few. We have an event that says, I'm about to bind, I'm beginning binding, I'm binding, I'm still binding, Finished binding, I was binding, I bound yesterday. You can bind to any of those. And with those events, you can tailor your experience to what you need in data binding. But let's talk about how data binding works from the fundamentals, because what we're trying to build is an interconnection of the data that's sitting behind your application, the data that's being displayed to your application. And not only can you bind to the data, so you're taking data, sucking that into your UI, but elements in your UI can bind to one another. And that allows elements to give their value to another element, which can then use that to set its own display. You'll be incredibly happy to know that that is the end of my slides, because we're not going to bother with an agenda. That's exactly what you expected to see today. And instead, what I will say is that everything that I'm going to show you will be available and is available on my website. I have a set of tutorials called Windows Phone from Scratch, and the data binding as described there will very much parallel what we're going to do today. But what we're going to do today will be principally in Silverlight Classic, that is to say, in the web. You will note that I have stripped down John's application just a little. This is where we're going to begin. Begin at the beginning, proceed to the end, and then stop. What we have here in book view that we care about are just two elements, a list box right here and a details grid here where we're going to put the title and the author and an image and so forth. Let's do that relatively straightforward first without data binding, but instead using code. You remember code, the way we used to make programs work. Let's try building this in code first. So what we're going to do is go to bookview.xaml.cs, which is the code behind this book view. And I'll be doing everything in code behind because the way the day is structured is MVVM comes later. I'm not even allowed to mention those initials. I didn't actually say that. But MVVM comes later in the day. So I'm going to put everything in code behind. And then later, other people get to come on and tell you what a jerk I am for doing that. So it works out well for me. Come on after Scott so no one's watching, and then later everybody ridicules the way you demonstrated it. It's a square deal. For that, they flew me out here from the Boston area. Feels good. Okay. Okay. Moving into bookviewxaml.cs, what I have here is just a skeleton that I want to code against. And in order to code, in order to have anything reasonable to do, I created, so that you didn't have to sit through watching me build it, a very, very simple web service. Okay, I lied. It's not a web service. It's a mock of a web service. That is to say, everything I'm doing will happen locally. But it should be a valid mock. It should work very much the way a web service would work. So I have in my web service one method, and that's called getBooks. And what it returns is an IEnumerable of book objects. The way it does that is it creates them on the fly, and it creates them in such a way that they're not all the same by using a random number generator. And I can walk you through that, but I think you can pretty much imagine that we're mixing and matching terms to create titles, mixing and matching first and last names to make authors, and so on, and creating ISBNs more or less on the fly. The book object itself starts out very simple. It's just a series of public properties. And here is a key idea for today, which is that data binding to a first approximation is binding against public properties of an object. So when you see data binding, what you're going to expect, the 90% case, is you're binding against public properties of an object, and therefore I've made all of these properties public. This is using the C# automatic properties where there is no backing variable. If you're not familiar with this, very, very quickly, what this says is there's a getter and a setter on a property called book ID, and the compiler will create for you a backing variable that the getter will get and that the setter will set. If you want to do anything in the getter or setter other than in the getter retrieve and the setter set, then you need to write a full property, and we'll see that a little bit later. So this is our book. This is what we'll be coding against. Let's go to bookview.cs. I've created a constant variable book count, set it to 25 so that we can get 25 books at a time. That could really be just about anything. And finally, returning to code as promised, what we're going to do in the constructor here is we're going to go ahead and get a book list by calling getBooks on that data service, that pseudo data service. Let's close these windows and give a little more room. Passing in that number 25, that will return to us a list of books. And then we are going to hand populate that list box. To do that, we're going to create a for each loop, and we will iterate through each of the books in that list we got back, and then go to the book list, ask for its items collection, call the add method, and pass in a string that's created by taking the title of the book and the author in parentheses. You remember this. This is called coding. It is very appealing to show this, show that it works. In fact, let's get really fancy and add an event handler. So we'll have an event handler should the user select one of these books, and then we'll implement that event handler once again in code by saying go over to that detail text box, TXB title, set its text to whatever the selected item is. And remember, we're just filling that list box with strings. The very cool thing about doing this in code is it works. So here we have the title and the author in parens, and when I click on it, well, we've got a resolution issue, so let me close that. And you can see that it is, in fact, putting the name onto that detail. Thank you for coming. Why not do it this way? And the answer is, as you will hear used all of the time throughout so many of these sessions, because it has, I hate to use the word, it's like saying Voldemort out loud, tight coupling. Tight coupling is the problem that must, whose name must not be said for C-sharp programmers. And it is a valid concern. My code, as written, knows an awful lot in the view about the data in order to make this work. It would be nice to be able to say, look, I'm going to give you a bunch of things that have titles and authors and ISBNs and so on, or I'm going to give you a bunch of books, but not have to know as much as I do about the structure of that to be able to pull that apart, make more maintainable, more sustainable code. I don't think I have to sell you on that. I think you're probably way ahead of me. So let's go back to the code and rip out the code, because wouldn't want to be accused of actually writing code. That's verboten. So we'll delete that. We'll get rid of the event handler. We'll get rid of the for each loop and even obtaining the books. And let's do this another way. The first thing that we're going to do is note that a list box has an item source property. The item source property says, if you hand me a collection that I can enumerate over, I will take each thing in that collection and add it to my list box. What we're going to do is hand it what we get back from getBooks, which you will remember is a collection, an IEnumerable of books. If I were to run this now, it would work perfectly. It would list 25 books in the list box. But because I handed it books, and books have many, many properties, it would have no idea which property to show, And so I would get a list that says book, 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 which is very useful under very limited circumstances. In order to have it show some of those public properties, I need to create an item template. Don't panic. It's okay. Item templates, for some reason, have become a spot of concern of, boy, that's hard. Turns out, it's not very hard. First of all, the term template in this particular case is being used very much like a physical template where you get one and it tells you how to make a lot. And that's what we're doing. We're saying here, for each item in this list box, here's how you display them, please. The way we do that is we go to the XAML. The thing that we want to template is in the list box. If I click on the list box and then switch over to the XAML, we'll be right at that list box. And there it is. And what I'm going to do is take this self-closing tag away, put in a regular closing tag, which will open up the list box for me. And all I need to do is say that I want to add a template, so listbox.itemTemplate. It wants to know what kind of template, so inside that I'm going to put a data template. And what I've now said is, Mr. Listbox, if you use this template for each data item, do whatever's in here. Well, what I want in there is the author, is the title, and then an open paren, the author name, and a closed paren. So let's start with the title. I need a text block. Now, the first thing I need is a stack panel because I want them next to each other. So let's add a stack panel. Stack panel defaults to an orientation of vertical, stacking one below the other. I'm from Massachusetts. I have a firm commitment to stack panels being able to have whatever orientation they like, and so I've set it to horizontal. Even I'm offended by that joke. The text block that I'm going to put in, text blocks have a text property. Typically, you're going to put a string there, but we don't know what string to put. So instead, we're going to put a promise. The promise says, please bind to the public property title. The text block looks up at you from its XAML and says, of what? And you say, don't worry about it. I'll let you know. I will set a data context on you or the panel you're in, somewhere up your visual tree, that will have the object, and I promise it'll have a title property that's public. When you get that, please take that value and display it here. And the text block says, oh, okay. You have to listen very carefully. A very small voice. All right, so let's add the other three text blocks. And now, let's talk about what we've done. We've said to the list box, you have an item source property. We're going to hand you an enumerated set of books. And we've also created, in that list box, a data item template that says, here's how each item should look. So if we run that, it's going to be able to display our list of books. Or I will be unemployed, one or the other. There we go. Whew. I like this job. Okay, this is now showing exactly what we were showing in code, but with no code. Declaratively in the XAML using that binding. If I want to be able to show the details, let's do that in two steps. Let's start by saying that we're going to decide what detail to show and do that by hand. So let's start by what detail do we want to show. Let's come over to this grid, which has the detail. And I'll make a little bit more room so you can see. I'll come up to the first one, which is the title. TXB title is the detail box for title. And I can say text equal, and this will look familiar. I say curly brace, binding, and then I just say what it's to bind to. Let's go down to the author. And here I've already got text, but it was set to blank, so I'll do the same thing. Binding to author. Let's come down to the ISBN. Here I want to do something slightly different. Let's take the text line out and I'll replace it with a snippet. And what I'm doing here, let me just get that so that you can see it. Okay, what I'm doing here is I'm saying binding path equal ISBN. Why path equal ISBN? Well, it turns out that the syntax for binding is path equal whatever property you want. So we could have written path equal title, path equal author. By just putting the name of the property, you're doing a shorthand for the same thing, path equal. However, I've added now string format. String format works exactly the way you would expect. It uses the same syntax as string.format. So that allows me to say ISBN colon, and then in braces, which I have to escape, the number is 0, which means the first argument, and what it's going to take for that argument will be whatever value I have bound to, which in this case will be the ISBN. If you follow that, definitely guaranteed to be in this course at a minimum. Excellent. Okay. The other thing that we can do is we can go up to that image that was up in the corner, and here we want to set the source. We're not setting the text now. We're setting the source for the image, and so we're going to say we want to add that to a property in the book. Not that. Forgive me. You know what? I did that in rehearsal, too. So I'm well rehearsed in making that mistake. We want to add that to a property called image source in the book. Now, book doesn't have an image source property, so we're going to go add that. Let's take 1 second and look at what's involved in that. So we'll go to book.cs, and let's add the image source. And you'll see that this is a little bigger than you might expect, because here I'm not using an automatic property. I'm using a full getter and setter. And the reason for that is my getter is going to do some work that is going to make my life much easier, but makes for just a little bit of tricky code. And that's all in these two lines. And what I'm saying here is that when you're ready to get the source, go up one level and down these two directories and find a JPEG whose name is whatever I pass in, .jpg, and what I'm passing in is the ISBN. And what that allows me to do in a real application is to have a set of JPEGs whose name is the ISBN of the book. When you click on the book, I can easily take that ISBN, give it to this getter, it assembles it into the right path to go get that image. So we're going to go ahead and let it do that. However, we still need to go and get that selection. This is only going to happen when the user clicks in the list box. So let's go back to our bookviewxaml.cs and say that we're going to handle when a selection is made on the book list box selection changed. And let's look at that implementation of the event handler. That's what's in highlighted right at the moment. And what this says is, the text boxes that I am going to display are inside a grid called details grid. I want to set the data context of that grid. Because remember, it's the data context that says, here's the object you're actually binding to. What I'm going to set it to is whatever the selected item is in the list box, cast to be a book, because we know they are books and that's a safe cast. And by the way, where this production code, I would, of course, check to make sure that that cast worked. So I would look for null. But I've stripped out all of the exceptions and all of the error testing to keep this fairly straightforward. Now that I have the selected item as a book, I can assign that to be the data context, and the properties that I'm binding to will now make sense, will now resolve to the individual book that is selected in the list. And we're going to get the display of the image of the title and only if I can unpin this, and of the author and the ISBN. And as we flip through them, you can see that that works. That's all through data binding, but we're still writing code in order to figure out what to bind to. What's the selected item? And as you can imagine, there is a better way to do that. Once again, we can replace that code with binding. So where do we have code to quickly review? In the code behind, the code that we have is picking out what's the selected item and setting the data context. Well, instead of doing that, we can go back to our book view. And here's where we're binding the image source. As I said, that's inside of a grid whose name is details grid. And we can instead go ahead and add a binding. And what this says is exactly what the code said, only declaratively in XAML. So what this says is set my data context equal to the result of the following. What's the following? Find the selected item and bind to its value. What selected item? Well, the selected item that's in the element book list box. And so we're taking the selected item out of the book list box, getting its value, and using that as the data context for the other values that we're binding to. That means that I can go back to the code behind and take out this code and take out this code. And notice what I'm doing is I'm moving more and more of the logic of my application out of code into binding, decoupling my view from my underlying data, and moving more things up to design time, declarative XAML, and away from runtime and code. And the little clock on the wall is telling me that I talk too much. So we are going to jump ahead and take a quick look at, we're going to take a quick look at element binding, two-way binding, and data conversion at a much quicker pace, which is good because that'll wake everybody back up. So fasten your seatbelts, and here we'll go. What we're going to do now is we're going to say we would like to show element binding used not just to find the data context, but to have two elements talking to each other. In order to do that, what I need to do is to add a new element onto my view. So let's go to book view. And down at the bottom of my book view, after the pieces that I already have, there we are. Okay, after the pieces that are already in place, let's go ahead and add a new stack panel. Come on, you can do it. This stack panel is going to be oriented horizontally, and what I'm putting inside of this stack panel is a slider. A slider is very much like a scroll bar, except that you can place it anywhere in your control, and it can be vertical or horizontal. We're going to make ours horizontal. We're going to tell it that it represents the value 0 through 100, that clicking on the bar will move it 10, that scrolling will move it 1, set its foreground color, and most important, set its value to quality. This is a property that it expects to find in the book. This is a rating on the book's quality. But in addition to that slider, we're also going to add a text block that's going to translate and demonstrate and show the slider's value as text. So let's add that text block. And the key thing about this text block is that its text is going to also be bound, but not to a property in the book, but rather to the value of the slider. And so it says bind to value, to the value property, but of what? Of the element quality slider. That's what's defined right up above. So we have a two-step process. The slider is going to get its value through binding to the book. The text block is going to get its value through binding to the slider. In order for that to work, of course, we need to have the book modified to have this property. And while I am at it, I'm going to modify the book class significantly. So let me bring up book, do a little hocus pocus. By the way, when you double click, who wrote Visual Studio? Are you here? When you double click, I mean, I know I'm supposed to single click, but when I double click, do you really need to detach it? I mean, is there a way to turn that off? I mean, really, how many times do I double click? And then I go, no, I meant to have you in there. Please, thank you, go back. And then I double click again, and it pops out. And I mean, am I the only one who's bothered by that? Jeez Louise. I mean, don't get me wrong, Visual Studio is the greatest IDE I've ever used, but that doesn't mean I'm satisfied. I mean, not in a minute. Okay, sorry. It says, on the prompt, it says, rant now. So what can I do? Okay. What I am going to do is take book.cs. I did all that so that you wouldn't notice that I was replacing book.cs wholesale. And so let's go and get our new book.cs, modify entire book, yes, because this will save us a bit of time. And what I've done in here is a few things, so I'll just walk you through them very quickly. One thing I did is I said, book is now going to implement iNotify property changed. iNotify property changed. First of all, have you noticed, by the way, that Microsoft, in our wisdom, has said, don't use Hungarian. Anybody old enough to remember Hungarian notation, right? Hungarian notation was the idea that you'd have an initial or a couple initials at the beginning of your variable name that told you its type. So you would have I age for integer age, or in my case, L age. And some of them were fun. My favorite was LPSZ. LPSZ, was that it? No, I'm missing a letter in there. Long pointed to, was it LPASZ? Help me here. Presentation by Mob. You're old. Tell me what it was. Thank you. Long pointed to a string terminating in zero. That's what it was. Yes, indeed. Okay, so we got rid of all that. We got rid of that. No more Hungarian notation. Except on our interfaces, where we still have iNotify, iWrite, iClaudius. I have no idea why this works. So we have iNotify property changed. And what that's about is this. When you bind, you're taking the value from your data and putting it into your UI. And when you update your UI, it gets written back to your data. But what happens if your data changes while you're looking at it? Now, this is not a problem if you write web applications that are only used by one person at a time. However, if your web application might be used by more than one person at a time, then it's possible that the data is being changed by someone else. iNotify property change says, if you will call this event when the property changes, I will make sure that the UI is notified. In order to do that, you can, in every setter, check whether anybody is registered with that event, the property change event, and if so, generate a notification, or you can do what everybody does, or everybody who's rational in any case, and create a helper method, typically called notify property. It typically looks exactly like this. In fact, I'm sure I stole this from somebody. And then they stole it from me. Because we all have written exactly the same lines of code, which says, in fact, if we've all written the same lines of code, why isn't it in the IDE? But that's neither here nor there. Notify property change takes a property name. If it's registered, then it creates a new property change event args, passes that property name, and so all your setters have to do is say notify property change image source. And by the way, if that's the idiom, then by the way, why don't I have a setter which is called set notify property changed, and then it does it for, never mind. I don't have to rewrite the language while I'm explaining because that will cause more confusion. And that's not, as far as I know, in SilverLight 5. Okay. What I've done is I've added that for all of these properties. I've also added our missing properties. Pardon me for scrolling like this. There's nothing I hate more than sitting in the audience and watching somebody go up and down in their code, and it's like, what is he showing me? I've added the image source property, and I've added the quality property that's in there somewhere. Come on, there you are, quality. So that we can now bind to that. So let's run that and hope that I've done everything I was supposed to do. Nope. Well, maybe I did. Oh, no, I didn't. And that's why this is set to zero. Not only do I have to add that to book, but I also have to add that to my book service so it gets set. So let's come down to create book, where we add all these values. and make sure that we also add a value for quality, or they'll all be the same. So we want to add a random quality between 0 and 100. Oh, look, I double-clicked again. I'm so happy. Somebody go outside, find Scott, tell him I'm sad about this. That's called the CLM, career-limiting move. And you can see that for each of these, we're now binding, and we're also getting this indicator. And what's most important is this is my slider. This is the text box that is dependent on that slider, that it's bound to it. And when I move the slider, the text box, which should be using a string format so that I don't have 14 digits, is clearly bound to it. Okay, moving along. The other thing that we can do is everything we're doing right now is one-way binding. Let's quickly look at what it takes to do two-way binding. It turns out to be incredibly simple. All we need to do is go to our book view, find something we would like to make two-way binding. For example, we could decide that the author in that detail is going to be two-way. And all we need to do is, after binding, is write comma mode. And it turns out that the mode defaults to one-way, but there are three choices. One time, which means I'm going to set it from the data and never update it, no matter what happens in the world. I have yet to use that. One way, which means I'm setting this from the data and I will keep it updated, but you can't change it. And two way, which says, yes, you can change it, and I'll write it back for you to the original data. So let's change that to two way. Now, this will now allow you to modify the data, except we have it in a text block. And text blocks are inherently read-only. So let's go ahead and change that from a text block to a text box. Now when we run this, we should see that the author in the details section is now a text box that allows for two-way binding. And in fact, if I come in here and change this to Scott Goo, stop that, then it is immediately updated over here. That's because of iNotify property changed. And if I go away from the book and come back, that has been preserved because we've actually updated the data and presumably would have written that back to the data service. But we have, in fact, successfully updated the data using data binding. Wicked cool. Okay. And easy. All right. The final thing that I would like to show you before we look at the real final thing that I'd like to show you, which comes right before the last thing I want to show you, is conversions. Conversions allow you to take one type of data and modify them into another type of data at the display during binding. It says to the binding agent, listen, I've got this data and you're binding it for me anyway. While you're at it, could you convert it to another type for me? Let's look at that quite quickly by adding to our, first we close, then we go back to our view. Right, to our view, come down to where we can add something useful. Where is, there we are. And we're going to add to that view another stack panel, and this stack panel is going to have in it two text boxes, which you can see right here. The first one says, two text blocks. The first one says, let me try that again in English. I'm going to have a text block which says in stock and a text box which will have the value yes or no. And what I want to do is bind that to a Boolean. Booleans are true and false. I want to convert it to yes or no. That's the conversion I'm going to use. This is an example I stole shamelessly from Pete Brown's excellent book on Silverlight. And so given the amount of time we have, I'm going to run through that fairly quickly. And then if we get caught short, you can find that on my blog or in his book. So we're going to add to the book a property that says, is this in stock? So let's come down to someplace where we can put a property. That's a good place. And we're going to add that property in, is in stock. Then we have to modify create books. So go to the book service. Oh, I love it. That's three, right? Are we keeping track? Because I give a dollar per time I do that to the charity of my choice, which is the Liberty Children Education Fund. All right. Now what we're going to do is in here we're going to randomly generate a number between 1 and 3. That is 1 or 2 modulo with 2, which means 50% of the time it's going to be true and 50% of the time it'll be false. It's essentially a coin toss as to whether it's in stock. Then we get to do the converter. We go to Solution Explorer. You're with me. What we've done is we've, in the view, we've said, is it in stock? In the book, we've said you've got a property in stock. In the book creator, we've said set that to true or false. Now we want to display it as yes or no. To do that, we're going to go and add a class to the solution, to the project. Hard to add a class to the solution, easy to add a class to the project. Add a class, and we're going to call that class true-false converter. And what we're going to say to this class is a few things. The first thing is that we're going to say that it's going to implement iValue Converter for which it needs system Windows data. So let's put in using system Windows data. And then we're going to say that our class implements, and what was that, iValue Creator? There it is, iValue Converter. Okay. The implementation for iValue Converter is that you must have two methods, convert and convert back. And very, very briefly, what I'm doing is I'm taking a true-false, determining whether it's true or false, and then using the ternary operator to set it to a string. And then on convert back, I'm taking the string, checking to see whether that string is yes, and if so, setting it to true and otherwise to false. However, the key question is how do I now tell my view to use this converter? And that comes in two steps. The first thing that I need to do is go to my, it is my book class, yes? To my book view, pardon me, to my book view. So go to book view XAML 4. The Visual Studio team will be hearing from me. Actually, I suspect I'll be hearing from them. We're going to go to the top of the XAML and create a resources section, which you can do in any XAML file, right below the initial set of headers. I'm going to say, let's have a resources section. And inside that resources section, I'm going to add a reference to my true-false converter. The reason I'm getting a line here is I did not build my true-false converter, so let's build this application. Please work. I think I'm missing a semicolon now that I think about it. Nope, it's happy. Okay. I always say that. I think I'm missing a semicolon because one day I will be, and then you'll say, wow, he remembered that? So what I've done in the resources is I've said I've got a true-false converter and its key is TF converter. So I can refer to that as TF converter. I can now go down to my text box. Let's go find that text box. And the easiest way to find it is to click on it in the visual, and that will take it to me to it in the XAML. And right now I'm already binding it to that two-way, but instead, let me put this line below it so that you can compare them. What I'm going to do instead is I'm going to leave the binding and leave the two-way, but I'm going to add that I'm using a converter. And the way I use a converter is I say you can find that converter by looking in the static resource using the key TF converter. And that's why we bothered to put that in. That's going to make the link back to the DLL that has my converter, back to that class that has my converter. And so when we run this, if we only have one text, we will have a Boolean value, true or false, whether it's in stock. Remember, we generated that in the code generator, in the book generator, and it's translated to yes or no. Notice WPF by Abby Edwards says no. I can go in and change that to yes. And in fact, that will persist because what it's doing is writing the value true back to the data from that yes, and then taking that true when I come back and converting it back to the string yes. Okay, before you go, let me show you very briefly, I'll show you the finished product rather than having you sit through the conversion that it would take to take what we just did and go over to the phone with it. But it turns out that that is quite straightforward. So what I'm going to do is take the list that was in my list box, put that on my main page, take the details that was over in the side and put that in my details page, and I can do that very simply by starting with a data list project in my solution. I'm then going to bring over the data as is. So I'm going to have the same set of data folders, and in this data folders I'm going to have the same book, the same book categories, the same book service, and so forth. And in order to make it look like a Windows Phone application, I'm going to use the styling of the Windows Phone application for the exact same data that I had sitting inside my web application. So I can spin through that, click on one, go to the details page. Here's the slider. Here's the ISBN, the name, the image. In stock, the converter still works as is. I haven't touched that. That works exactly as is. There is a performance issue with using value converters in Windows Phone, but it does work as is. All right, given the amount of time that we have left, read as none, let me show you very, very briefly where there are some additional resources on this for those of you who are interested, which is if you go to jesseliberty.com, let's do that very quickly, and slide down on the right-hand side, you will find a section called Tutorials. Under Tutorials, you'll find a section called Windows Phone from Scratch. Windows Phone from Scratch, although targeted at learning Windows Phone, assumes no previous Silverlight development, although it does presume you are wicked smart and moves very, very quickly. So it starts with how do you get things and when do you use Silverlight versus XNA, but by number five, it's up to data binding. Number six takes data binding a little further. You'll recognize that graphic. And number seven talks about element binding. So much of what we covered here is there, and that will be building going forward. So that's at jesseliberty.com. There are also lots of resources on silverlight.net. I cannot thank you enough. You have been truly, truly terrific.